Okay, here we go.
Got
There's too many buttons. So anyway, this is the oxalates, two carbons and the oxygens, which are very acidic and looking for the minerals. And it especially likes calcium. And when it binds to the calcium, it either gets excreted, like you can excrete 150 milligrams more or less a day. But if you eat too many oxalates, it will start to accumulate and it'll go into storage in different places. It's not always the kidney. So these are plant toxins. They're found in certain plants. Some are higher than others in toxicity. And it's basically plants produce toxins in order to avoid being eaten by animals. And some are very toxic, high concentrations, like rhubarb leaves. Do we all know you don't eat the leaves of the rhubarb because they're toxic? And the reason they're toxic is they have a lot of oxalates in them and they can literally kill you. And what I didn't know before, but even the red parts of the rhubarb that we eat are also high in oxalates. And it's high enough to accumulate in the body, but it won't, kill you like the leaves will. So, why am I giving this talk? I feel like many people have chronic inflammation or health problems, and we don't know why. We're looking for a cause, but just can't figure it out. And I think that in the past few months, I've found a possible cause, and most doctors do not know about this. The doctors know that it can cause kidney stones, but it doesn't, they don't know to look for oxalates as a cause of arthritis or other inflammation. And it's even hard to find information if you're looking for it. I had trouble finding why I was having this diarrhea when I was on carnivore diet. And anyway, this is a very, I feel it's going to be a very easy thing to detect, to figure out, and to solve. Because you don't have to be on a special a keto diet or this diet or that diet. You can just make minor changes in your foods from a high oxalate like spinach. You can use arugula or romaine lettuce or something like that that's low oxalate. So, and it would only take, I believe it would only take a week or two for you to figure out if this is your problem, if you have a chronic problem. And people that are around mold are especially susceptible because mold carries oxalates too. You know,
Oh,
you can get
great.
them in.
That's all we need.
And mold has been a very popular subject. So this, I'm not going to read the whole list of symptoms, but you can see how many things oxalate, even minor poisoning, can cause in the digestive system. And the ones in italics are what I experienced. That was my first symptom. I know this was diarrhea. And metabolic, it can go into any of your glands. And just, I got so tired. I had to sleep all the time and brain fog and weak. You know, I usually go around the perimeter of my yard with Willow 10 times a day. And it was hard for me to get around once. You know, that's how tired I was. And it can attack the immune system, causing autoimmunity and itching. I had itchy ears before I had the dump. I had itchy ears and pain, lots of pain. And then cardiovascular, if it lands in your heart or your arteries, it can cause arteriosclerosis and just cardiac arrhythmias. All kinds of problems there. And my heart did begin to feel like really weak at the worst of it. And then I did have trouble sleeping, neurological. I had trouble thinking, joints, muscles, and bones. I think it's a common cause of arthritis. I did find in the medical literature that it's a rare cause of arthritis, but it's only rare because nobody's looking for it. You know, they just give you the anti-inflammatory drugs. Muscle spasms, because of the tat attaches to your calcium and magnesium and all your minerals that your muscle uses to contract and relax. Because those minerals are not available to the muscle, you start having muscle spasms and weakness and unstable joints. And so all these symptoms you can have. Skin, it was amazing, the rash and the peeling, like these things were coming out of my skin. And actually in my hand, it pushed the skin off of my hand. And it turned into this purple sore. And my granddaughter was pointing at it like, ooh, boo. It was really disgusting. Maybe I should have used a Band-Aid, I don't know. So, and my eyes never get red and itchy, but people were even telling me I had red eyes, and I'd wake up in the morning and they'd be like sticking together, and these sleepy seeds came out that were actually sharp. And
Wow.
now I'm
How long
wondering
did this go
about
on, Connie?
what?
How long did all this go on?
Well, it started like I'll go into that like with my
Okay.
experience right after this. Oh, this thing, I knew a woman with this vulvodynia. Have you ever heard of that?
I have it. I
The
have it.
your vagina burns, and like
Yeah.
15 years ago, I knew a woman. She was going to the doctors. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with her or help her at all. And now I know, what was wrong with her probably. And I did notice it. Of course, the kidney stones. That's the only thing the doctors know that it causes, kidney stones. But I did notice cloudy urine. As it comes out, you can sort of see it's cloudy. So anyway, with my experience, it led me down a path I didn't even know existed. I heard people with kidney stones should avoid eating spinach and almonds because they have oxalates and then they, cause the kidney stones. But I didn't think much of it because I didn't have the problem, I didn't think. So I also always brushed off the ideas of plants containing toxins. You hear people occasionally talking about this. And I just thought, oh, spinach is healthy. What more is there to know? So before my diet, we'll go back, before this all started, I thought I was healthy. I had painful feet, especially in the morning or after I walked a lot. So I blamed Willow for making me walk too And I also had itchy ears, which I thought was a chronic infection. So I kept putting an antibiotic ointment in there, which didn't really help. And then the reason I went on the carnivore diet was this seemed to be my answer to carbohydrate cravings, which caused me to keep falling off the keto diet. And in recent years, keto was the only way I could lose weight or even stay the same. So years of eating carbs and controlling calories had slowed my metabolism and made me more insulin resistant. And I just kept gaining and gaining and gaining weight. So if I ate a few carbs on the keto diet, I would just be craving more and I'd go off the diet. So there were many stories on YouTube and elsewhere, and including some doctors that related that they overcame their carb cravings, their carb addiction with the carnivore diet because you essentially eat no carbs. So there were many success stories, including curing autoimmune disease and tremendous weight loss, like over 100 pounds, some of these women and men lost. So I started carnivore diet on January 4th of this year. And at first I felt great, didn't have any hunger. And I started losing, like I lost 8 pounds in just like 4 weeks. But on week two, I started getting watery diarrhea. And I looked and some carnivores reported having diarrhea for the first 2 weeks. So I was able to deal with that. And they had excuses for why this happens, but most of them didn't get to the point of the oxalate poisoning. And then I got more desperate because I got massive inflammation on week three. And the discharges from my eyes and ears and skin and my joint, I got I felt like old for the first time in my life. I'd get up in the morning and I could barely walk. I'd have to hold onto the walls. And then my whole right ear swelled up and the inflammation actually started going into my skull. And my brain felt swollen and I couldn't think. And I slept a lot. So I kept searching for carnivore diarrhea on YouTube. And finally, there was a mention, somebody mentioned oxalate dumping and diarrhea from that. So I pursued that. I started searching for oxalate diarrhea. And I found just a couple people gave great information on this. And what happens is evidently, if you go suddenly no oxalates, like on a carnivore diet, the body senses this in your blood that there's no oxalates, and your body decides it's a good time to dump all of the oxalates that they accumulated over your lifetime. It just dumps into your blood and you get like severe oxalate poisoning. Oh. And so this doesn't happen to everyone. But why does it happen to some of us? So it depends on number one, how many oxalates you accumulate over time. So most plant toxins like gluten and lectins and solanins, which are from nightshades, those can be broken down and eliminated, but oxalates don't break down. We can eliminate about 150 milligrams a day. So if you just are moderate in your, you know, oxalate in your diet, then it's no big deal. But the rest that you don't eliminate, usually from your urine, goes into storage in various places. So it depends on your age and your diet over time and your individual ability to eliminate oxalates. There is some genetics involved. Some people get calcium oxalate kidney stones, but they can accumulate in any organ or joint in the body and eventually cause inflammation. But many of us ignore the mild symptoms or dismiss these as old age and just take anti-inflammatory drugs. It doesn't help that most doctors don't recognize the oxalates as a problem. So why did I get it? First of all, I'm 72 and I've had a long time to accumulate them. And years ago, I went vegetarian for 3 years and ate a lot of grains and beans. And I've always loved chocolate, ate a lot of chocolate. I've been on and off keto for the past 15 years and ate a lot of nuts on keto. I've eaten a lot of nuts, chocolate, salads with high oxalate veggies, chia seed chocolate pudding, ate a lot of that. And I've used almond flour as an alternative to wheat flour. So all of these foods are very high in oxalates, so I had plenty of to dump. And then my right ear, the reason that swelled was because I have two large fillings in my right jaw that are made from calcium oxalate and were put in 52 years ago. And I thought this was great because they don't break down or leach mercury or anything. So, but they have lots of oxalates. So my recovery, the first thing I did to stop the dump was eat a handful of nuts and chocolate to get my blood levels up. And then my body stopped dumping. And so this started to reduce the symptoms.
Wow.
I got Sally K. Norton's book, Toxic Superfoods, and listened to her interviews. She is one of the top experts because she was going for her BS in nutrition and her master's in public health up at Cornell when she experienced these symptoms, and she didn't realize it was because of her healthy diet. She was vegan for 8 years and vegetarian for 8 years and ate a lot of oxalates. So anyway, that's how she discovered it, and now she's trying to educate people on this. So after I stopped the dumping, I went on a low oxalate diet where I added bananas, apples, cruciferous vegetables, onions, saltines, and white rice to my diet. And so these have oxalates, but low levels. And so that's what I'm doing right now. I also, following Sally's book, I made a concentrate of B vitamins, electrolytes, and lemon juice that I added to my water. So the recipe for each day is benfotiamine, B6, biotin, salt, potassium, and CalMag, and lemon juice. And I add this to my water about 3 cups, 4 cups a day. And then that helps eliminate the oxalates. Then I try to help it. It's trying to get out my skin. So I try to help that. I take my foot bath twice a week, and I get Epsom salts baths every other day. And then I use Sue's idea of rubbing the Epsom salts on the bottom of my feet, because they're obviously trying to get out the bottoms of my feet because they hurt. And I put it in my ears too. So this is really working well. I can go for days with no symptoms. And if I eat a little bit too much, like usually saltines, if I have too many saltines, the feet will start to hurt and my ears will itch a little bit, but I know that just back off on that. And one time I went out to lunch and I was fine, but I ate a couple of small potatoes, and on my way home, my right ear swelled up, and that night it was really painful. So that was just from the oxalates from the potatoes I ate.
Wow.
So what do we have? We have about 5 minutes left. And I just wanted to give you the link to Dr. Berg's video. Rather than running, I could share the video with you, but you can, if you're interested, look at this video, which I thought was a very concise. I think it was 13 minutes long, and he just covered a whole lot, because he evidently experienced the oxalate dump too, and he wanted to warn people. So he has a lot of this is another factor that can increase your oxalate production, like your body can produce oxalates. And if you take a whole lot of vitamin C, I don't mean 500 milligrams, but if you take grams of vitamin C, your body can make oxalate out of it. Also glycine. Some people take glycine supplements, or xylitol. A lot of people use xylitol, to kill things in your, an infection in your nose or mouth or something. Some people do that, or chew on xylitol gum. And anyway, don't do that. And also, if you have fat malabsorption because you don't have enough bile, that can increase oxalates. And an increase in iron. A lot of people have an increase in iron as you age, and that can create inflammation, and then an accumulation of oxalates. So the way you test this is if you go and donate blood and you feel better afterwards, you might have too much iron in your body. And most women don't get it premenopausal because they bleed. So anyway, this is how Dr. Berg suggests, which is pretty much what I just went over. Of course, we take D3 and K2 just because we need to, right? Everybody's on D3, right? Because yep. It's the one vitamin that we can't get from our diet. So, record. Okay.
Recording in progress, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what happened to me was I spent a lot of time with a couple of people who have gout, and their brother and sister. And like, they take gout medicine and they restrict what they eat, and, their toes hurt. And so I was having a lot of pain in my big toes. So I was talking to them about gout, and Diana gave me colchicine, and that didn't help. And then I was reading about gout, which is, Connie, what are those? Are uric acid crystals, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So gout is uric acid crystals that accumulate probably in your big toe. And somehow I came across oxalates, and oxalate crystals do the same thing and accumulate in the same places And the colchicine wasn't helping me. So I'm like, well, maybe it's not gout. And then I started reading about oxalates, and I had been eating spinach for breakfast every day for weeks. Spinach and mushrooms. I thought, this is the perfect breakfast. It's not carbs. It's not, you know, it's easy for me to digest. And it's like, I finally figured out my breakfast solution, something that doesn't make me feel sick. And, you know, my toes are hurting more and more. And so I stopped eating the spinach and things improved. And now that Connie's given us the whole story about oxalates, now I'm going to have to read Sally Norton's book, because there's a lot of stuff there that I wasn't really familiar with. And also, I eat nuts every day and chocolate. And what are the other things? Glycine. If you take your collagen, collagen is high in glycine. Uh-huh. And I've been taking grams, 4 or 5 grams of vitamin C for like 50 years. And I can't stop taking the vitamin C. You know, apparently I need the vitamin C. So I can't remember what happens when I stop taking it, but it's not good. And I think it has to do with arthritis and stuff. But so I do all, I have all these inputs, also the fat malabsorption due to bile deficiency. You know, I take bile supplements. Thank you, Dr. Berg, but I did that before he said to do it. Oh. And yeah, so I have all these inputs that would give me a lot of oxalates, but the spinach is like orders of magnitude higher in oxalates than anything else. So the spinach was the kicker. So as soon as I stopped eating spinach for breakfast every day, I was like hugely improved.
Where does chocolate lie on that spectrum?
High.
Yeah, we need to know. And so, coffee. I mean, is coffee in the same
category? No, coffee. Thank you. Coffee's okay. But tea. Tea can be high, especially if you brew it dark, you know, brew it long.
Okay,
that's black tea. It's not herbal tea, it's black tea.
Not the herbal tea, no.
Okay. But Connie, doesn't coffee and tea have a lot of the cheaper ones contain mold spores?
I don't know. I haven't. I've heard that about coffee and buying the mold-free coffee and stuff. I didn't feel the need to do that.
Okay.
I just bought mold-free coffee. It's very expensive. And they test it, and it's also low acid because I had some cancer on my cheek. So the low acid, and the way you can also combat that is just dilute it and don't drink it really, really strong.
Okay.
You know, I just realized the coffee I drink comes fresh from Guatemala, from this. I toured a coffee co-op down there one time, mm-hmm. and now I get really fresh coffee that's just been picked, and they roast it and they mail it out the next day. So I get it about 2 days after it's been roasted, and I get whole bean. So maybe by doing that, it
helps.
I don't feel like it's moldy. I feel like it's really fresh.
Fresh. Okay. Good to know.
You can give us that contact, Connie.
Yeah, they would love that. Oh, I love those people. They're great. There's one farm that's all run by women.
Nice.
So.
So I still have a lot of questions about oxalates. And one of them is about absorption, because a lot of things in nutrition are, you can eat them, but they're not absorbed. And one question I still have is, if I eat raw spinach, apparently, when you eat raw vegetables, especially carrots, have really hard cell walls. All the stuff inside the cell walls, if you eat the vegetable raw, the stuff inside the cell walls is most likely not going to be absorbed, because the cellulose in the cell walls is not broken down in your digestive tract until it hits your colon or the very end of your digestive tract. And then the cellulose is digested by the microbes there. But so the stuff inside the cell walls is released, but it's not absorbed into your body, because you don't absorb stuff from your colon. So I read this really cool thing about nutrition research, and it basically blows almost all nutrition research out of the water, because if you do research on rats or mice, what they do And they're not the only animals who do something like this. I talked to Connie about this a little bit.
Uh-oh.
What rats and mice do is they eat their poop. So they make special fecal pellets. Yeah, they make these special fecal pellets, which takes the nutrients that the microbes have developed for them in their hindgut or their colon. And then those nutrients are available. So, you know, various vitamins and minerals that are manufactured by the microbes, or nutrients that have been released from the cell when the cell wall is digested. All of these nutrients are available in the fecal pellets. So the rats and the mice, they just take these things and they put them right in their mouth. You know, they take them right out of their butt and put them right in their mouth. So even researchers who try to correct for this problem by having screens that the mice and rats live on, they're saying, well, all the poop falls through the screen. That's not the case either. So
that's the
I went to Penn State to study nutrition a really long time ago. And it was a very disappointing experience because they told us that we could get all our nutrients from our diet and taking supplements was stupid. And I was already addicted to vitamin C and still am. And I just realized that, anyway, that's kind of an aside, but like nutrition research based on rats and mice is like most of the time forever and ever has ignored this problem about bioavailability and absorption of nutrients that you put in your mouth. So I have a whole lot of questions about oxalates. Like if you eat raw spinach, are you going to get the oxalates from it, or is it going to, or are those oxalates going to go down the toilet? And I remember that vitamin C was like, even in the 70s or 80s, whenever I was studying nutrition, they were telling us, you know, excess vitamin C will give you kidney stones because it'll be turned into oxalates. But they also found out from the research that was not true, that in fact, excess vitamin C did not give you kidney stones. So maybe dietary oxalates are the real cause. So I have a ton of questions, so I need to get Sally Norton's book. But I think the big question here is going to be, like, when are these things absorbed and when are they not absorbed? And I'm hoping Sally Norton has some answers to that, because I know just eating something doesn't mean it's going to be absorbed into your body. Okay, those are my questions. I'll have to look at the book.
I can say that I have had kidney stones in the past, but I haven't had kidney stones for about 20 years now. And they tried everything. They tried blasting them, and it can be very dangerous. It can rupture your kidney. And then I discovered that, and I did the composition of them was calcium oxalates, but also calcium hydroxyapatite. And I realized that I was getting the calcium hydroxyapatite. That's not normally in someone's diet. That was in a calcium vitamin that I got from GNC. So I stopped all supplements that have calcium hydroxyapatite. And I took high doses of magnesium citrate. And from what I read at the time, magnesium dissolves the kidney stones. So I haven't had a problem since.
Good.
No, this is important because I take, if I break a leg or something and want to take calcium, I always take calcium hydroxyapatite. So that's important.
This is very expensive. I just got this because I have osteoporosis. Mm. It's Ostinol. It's called, it's about $100 a bottle for 30 capsules. But it's hydrolyzed collagen and proteins, including bone morphogenic proteins, BMPs.
Bone what proteins?
Morphogenic proteins.
So basically you're taking collagen and some proteins that are like the same shape as what you find in your bone matrix, maybe? Is
probably
that what that looks like?
Probably, yeah.
That sounds right.
ProNature's BMP complex. Partially hydrolyzed collagen, including the bone morphogenic proteins, yeah.
Okay.
That's by Regenerative Tissue Science.
Yeah, but that's not, you're not getting minerals in that, are you? Does it have any minerals?
I have been taking that instead of calcium.
Uh-huh.
And I do my testing and I don't need calcium.
Uh-huh.
And I don't really have, I don't eat cheese really too much. So I'm not getting calcium from that. And I did get rid of the spinach because I heard about the oxalates a year, 50, mm-hmm. 40 years ago,
mm-hmm.
That they were high oxalates.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know what an oxalate was. I thought it was for the acidity, you know.
Yeah,
it is acid. Well, this is interesting. And from my what I learned when I broke my leg, the way bone is built is when you break your leg, first you go through inflammation, which brings all the nutrients to the spot, and it stabilizes the break somewhat. And then the second stage is to build a collagen matrix. And the collagen matrix is necessary for the calcium to deposit. So what you're saying makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. You are building the collagen matrix so your bone can rebuild.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Anybody else have something to say?
Can I just add in, and I've told Connie this before when she first shared this with me about oxalates. As long as I can remember, and I do like spinach, I really do. But growing up, all my green vegetables, in order to get them to get me to eat them as a child, my mother put vinegar on them. And I would eat anything if it had vinegar on it except lima, and they're not worth it. But anyhow, growing up, I got rid of the vinegar habit. And I found that anytime I would eat cooked spinach, the edge of my tongue would go numb. And I should have known then there was some reason. And the other time my tongue goes numb is if I eat any baked good that has aluminum in it. Like baking powder has aluminum in it, and it's just the rim, not the center, but all the way around my tongue. So I tried eating raw baby spinach in salads, and it didn't happen then. It was just when it was cooked, and I never paid any attention to it until, you know, as usual, Bright Star Connie burst open. Oh, wow, my body's trying to tell me something. But yeah, I'm sorry to say, body, you're not getting any more spinach.
Huh. Yes, spinach.
See, this goes along with what Liz was saying about the raw is not as bioavailable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did start partially. I read something recently. You should partially cook your carrots. Oh. You don't have to cook them all the way, but break them to break that down with the heat.
Yeah.
But the oxalates are not broken down with the heat, but if you boil your, they were saying, if you boil something with really high oxalates, it's not going to, a 17% decrease in oxalates when you're talking spinach is not going to make that much of a difference. But if you boil your broccoli, which is relatively low oxalate, for 12 minutes, and then toss the water, that's going to reduce the oxalates by, I believe it was 50%. So it'll be even lower. So I was
thinking. Yeah, but Tani, how long are you going to boil that broccoli? 7 minutes? I don't know if you would even want to eat it after that.
I know. And it goes back to, I remember how my mom boiled the vegetables to death.
Yep.
Yeah. I hated them.
They all did, I think.
But yeah. Maybe they were onto something.
Well, how about cooking Brussels sprouts? We broil them. We put the Brussels sprouts, cut them in half, put some olive oil over it, and put them in the oven. And
mm-hmm. But yummy. That's a brassica, and it's low oxalate anyway.
So it's okay to cook it that way?
Yeah, it's okay to eat, you know, Brussels sprouts because it's in that family of broccoli, cauliflower, kohlrabi, cabbage, arugula, all that is safe.
And you forgot to mention in your list, Swiss chard is another baddie.
Oh, Swiss chard, that's almost like beet greens, you know, which are bad. So I will send out the whole list. I have a long list of the high and the medium and low vegetables that I have on my refrigerator. But now I pretty much have it memorized.
So are you feeling okay now, Connie? You seem back to yourself.
It's day and night. It's actually better. My ears don't itch like they did before. And my feet, remember from the time I got Willow, my feet, I was complaining. And now I get out of bed and I'm like, oh my goodness, my feet don't hurt. You know, it's different.
So how do you suggest that we maybe not go through a drastic detox, but how can we sort of eliminate our accumulation more safely?
Well, just when I send out the list, just eat off of the low side. Mm. Just do that. And also, if you can make up the solution with the B vitamins, the B1, B6, and well, some of you take benfotiamine, which is the B1, and biotin, and the electrolytes, and the lemon, squeeze a lemon in there, and use that as a concentrate for the next week to add to your water. And that will help you eliminate the oxalates. So if you do that, and then you go low oxalate, and wait a week or two and see how your symptoms are. Just pay attention.
Now, do you put B1 and B6 drops in it?
No, I actually got bulk from the bulk supplements. It's a company that sells things in bulk, because I do my own mixing of vitamins a lot.
So it's a powder?
Yeah, yeah.
Does honey have oxalates? Band.
What?
Does honey have oxalates?
What?
Does honey have oxalates?
No. No, it's an animal product.
I don't think
there's anything bad about honey. You just can't drink tons of it.
Well, sugar.
Yeah, the sugar.
And it gets in all your teeth. Well, it depends how you take it.
Well, it's an antibacterial also.
No, it's very good if you get good honey. Right. But yeah. It will hurt your teeth.
Wow.
So if I take a capsule of B1, B6, and biotin, and mm-hmm. drink my lemon water, which I've been doing lately anyway, that would do the same thing. It's all going to...
Right. And add some electrolytes to that. Now, I just found out this morning by listening to Dr. Berg, you honestly, it's only, I think, 13 minutes long. Oh. It's a really good, concise information, lots of information. And he said, when you take B6, you should take the B, wait a minute, notes, pyridoxal 5-phosphate, they call it P5P or PLP form, because if it's the cheaper that's in a lot of vitamins called pyridoxin, it can actually cause a deficiency of the active form of the vitamin in your body. So okay. When you take the B6, it's best to take that 5-phosphate form of it.
So the pyridoxin is not good.
Right. Take the pyridoxal 5-phosphate. And I just learned that. I have to check what mine is.
I was just going to go on. I think Darlene had something to comment.
I do, actually. Just really quick, because I know we have to wrap it up, but I have a lot of those symptoms, Connie. So if I do, I want to get that book, obviously. But do you have any other recommendations of books? I have vulvodynia. I've had that for 15 years. I also have calcium buildup. One is over my left eye and one is in my abdomen. I probably have calcium buildup in other areas as well. So I know I probably more than likely need to do this diet, and it's been mentioned before in other groups. Do you have any recommendations? Because I actually have so many aggressive symptoms on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Books to read or how to approach it much slower?
This is the only book that I have that I found recommended, but I found 4 sources on YouTube where they go into it. Dr. Berg, this short video is great, but I will send out Sally Norton's interviews, and there's a French nutritionist who's really good at talking about these. And then there's another guy that goes into deep dives on different subjects, and he did a really excellent one on oxalates. So mm-hmm. I will send out those. Okay.
Hey, I'm sorry.
What?
Hi, Bert.
What?
Oh, sorry. I have something to say.
Okay.
The dog has something to say. Dee, I think that you can get a lot of mileage out of detoxing with infrared light and the hot Epsom salt baths. Because, like, I eat all these oxalates all the time in huge amounts, but I also do a whole lot of, you know, hot, really hot Epsom salt baths. And like Connie said, that probably gets a lot of the stuff out. Mm-hmm. And if you go to your hardware store and get some heat lamps, infrared lights that people put on their chickens, like I just sit with my heat lamps a lot of hours a week. Yeah.
Like how long do you do it, Liz? How long do you?
I'll have three of them on the floor so that they're shining on my legs. And yeah. I just lie on my back and let those things shine on my legs. And, you know, I just do it all the time. I'll do it for like an hour because okay. It feels really good. It feels like sunbathing, but you don't get a sunburn. And like you just put them on the floor, they shine yeah. on your legs. Okay. It feels wonderful. And I think that really helps with the detox.
So it's the same light bulb you would use in a chicken coop type thing, or?
Yeah, those okay. nice red ones. Okay. And you have to get the right fixture to screw them into.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, you can't just screw them into anything. They have to be the 250 watt thing.
Okay.
You know, once you buy those light bulbs, it's basically free therapy.
Yeah, because it's expensive to go to any doctor or APRN to do that. It's a very expensive procedure.
I have an infrared light that I put my feet on too.
Yeah,
that would work too. And I wasn't thinking in terms of oxalates, but it's good healing.
So if you're detoxing with this light, what is the channel for exit? Is it your skin?
Sweat, your skin. But I don't sweat. I don't sweat at all. No, not at all. I can't even do, I've been like that most of my life, and I got worse as I aged. And my father and my grandmother were the same way. So it's a genetic thing.
I have something to say about that because there are horses that don't sweat. And I was looking at some research about horses that don't sweat, you know, and they're like large, they could die from overheating.
Right.
And I think iodine was the key that I came up with. If you iodine for various things, you might want to look into that. I write a Substack. It has a ton of information about iodine.
You use iodine on your horses?
I just from skin cancers with iodine. And my horses get iodine supplements. It's a seaweed based one.
Yeah, I mean I haven't researched it enough, Liz, to feel comfortable just randomly taking iodine gems.
I have a ton. If you've looked at Substack, I have a Substack with a bunch of articles about iodine, mostly questions, but also information. And it's geared to horses, but I've also put on like Dr. Berg's YouTube and stuff like that. I'll put it in the chat. I'll put how you can find it.
Okay,
in the
great.
Chat. But
thanks.
Iodine is like, I'm pretty sure that it would help the horses who can't sweat, but I'll see if I can find something.
Actually, I've actually read that about, you know, that my particular situation, and, you know, I just don't want to like randomly start taking supplements without knowing what I should be taking. Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Totally.
And have something to do with the thyroid. Is that true for the horses as well?
Absolutely. It's just
so it's the thyroid that's not functioning, which is the main thing, which is telling everything to sweat.
It is maybe not the main thing because apparently there's iodine receptors all over your body. So iodine is not just for the thyroid. It's like has a ton of purposes and uses. And one of the weirdest things I read about iodine recently has to do with the zeta potential of your blood and the fluids in your body.
And I mean, I know people who have hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's and they sweat just fine. So I don't think it's a total correlation. Not at all.
Yeah. It's not at all just the thyroid. And right. So I'll just put my link on the chat.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks. There you go.
So Darlene, then if she does that, she would go on the heat lamps first. And if she doesn't sweat, possibly do the Epsom salt bath right after.
Well, if she doesn't sweat, she would, if I were Darlene and I didn't sweat, I wouldn't do any of those things until I figured out a way to get my body to sweat.
Yeah.
Personally.
Right. Well, the other doctor I've heard, and this was from a comment on YouTube, this woman was, she went carnivore like I did, from keto, eating all those nuts and whatever, almond flour. And then she goes carnivore and she experienced the dump, and nobody would tell her, you know, what was happening until she finally figured it out. But her main symptom was a bile duct blockage.
Oh.
And her GI doctor told her to go on a low oxalate diet for the bile duct blockage.
Oh.
And sure enough, she didn't need surgery.
That's great. Is that a local doctor?
I don't know. It was on YouTube. Could be anywhere.
No, I don't think that. I don't think doctors learn this stuff either. It's not taught in med school. It's just, you know, in order to find some of these rare invisible diseases for proper treatment, they just don't teach that in basic medical school. You have to see a functional medicine or an integrative medicine doctor who studies.
If they'd even know, you know,
right.
This is
right.
Like, I look at these doctors who are integrative and stuff, and they don't even mention it.
Right.
Dr. Berg and a couple of these others, they knew about it, but most didn't.
No.
And yeah, you know about Rockefeller went into the medical schools, I think it was in the 1920s, and he got rid of all the holistic information because he was starting to make drugs out of the petroleum.
Yeah.
And so he just got rid of all of the common sense. And also, if you're on high doses of vitamin C, like Liz, you can't just stop. Your body gets addicted to the vitamin C. And that's why pregnant women should not be taking high doses of C, because then the baby will be born addicted.
Oh.
And what happens is the kidneys kind of ramp up to start excreting all the excess vitamin C. You'll hear people say, oh, you can't take too much vitamin C because if you get too high, the kidneys will get rid of it, which is true. But then the kidneys start adapting to that so that you can't just stop the C. You have to gradually, you know, wean yourself off.
So I wanted to share my experience with kidney stones.
Yes.
So in 2018, I had my first episode, the most painful thing by far that I've ever experienced, even more so than childbirth. And then my next experience was in 2021. For 3+ months, I had kidney stones, passed more than 25 kidney stones. I had I had a urologist who kept saying he wanted to do surgery. I had two kidney stones that were obstructing my ureter. And knowing that I don't do well with anesthesia, I wanted to avoid that surgery. July 2nd, I was scheduled for surgery. The night before, I passed a kidney stone that was 4 millimeters by 9 millimeters.
Oh.
I took it with me, and the nurses in the hospital all were coming over looking at it. They could not believe that someone had passed something so big.
What was that dimension?
It was 4 millimeters by 9 millimeters.
What's that, an inch?
Yeah.
Almost as big as a pea. Size of a pea.
It's bigger than, the 9 millimeters is bigger than a pea. They say that if you have a kidney stone less than 5 millimeters, that you can pass it through your ureter. But I still had one more in me that was obstructing, so I went ahead and had the surgery done. The following year, I had several more kidney stones for about a week. And then in 2023, I had 5 kidney stones that I passed. So in 2021, I can't remember if I said I'd passed more than 25 kidney stones during that 3-month period of time. It was a lot. In 2023, I passed 5 stones over about 11 days. And I think shortly after that, Connie and I were talking, and two things happened. One, I'd asked my urologist what I could take naturally because he wanted to put me on meds and I didn't want to take them. And he said that there was an herb called Chansa Piedra. And so I started taking that. And then I talked with Connie at about that same time, and she had an herbal tea that she had recommended. So since then, that was February of 2023, knock on wood, I haven't had any kidney stones. But I do believe that and I haven't changed my diet. I mean, I wasn't, the urologist that I saw two different urologists. One said that I should go on a low oxalate diet. The second one said that there was a lot of disagreement about whether that made any difference or not. So I didn't change my diet, but I did start taking the tea, drinking it every single day, and started with the chansa piedra, the herb, and I take that every single day. And so for the last year, I've not, which is good for me, considering that history, I haven't had any kidney stones. So so those two things I think may have also helped. But I am interested in doing the low oxalate challenge to see if that, you know, just to see if I feel better, because I do have a lot of the symptoms.
Have they been able to tell you what it is about your body that you continually create these things within you? They can't give you an answer. Why?
No. Yeah, nobody understands
happening. That. Did you go through any of these when you were pregnant?
I didn't have any, no. I mean, 2018 was the first time I had a kidney stone.
And that was after you'd gone through your pregnancies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've just had one daughter who's 26, so that was years later. Okay. Yeah.
So you bring up a good point that I call this Dennis's herbal tea, because he came to me years ago and did the Rife machine for kidney stones, and it did get rid of all his kidney stones, the frequencies. And then as long as he stayed on the herbal tea that somebody gave him the recipe, he didn't, and he only drinks it like maybe once a week or something, and then his stones never came back. So I'll put that in the notes, the recipe.
Okay. Yeah, it's also interesting. I study traditional Chinese medicine and do Qigong. And in traditional Chinese medicine, kidney stones are a result of fear. So I've been sitting with that and trying to figure out what that means. But that is just something to think about.
And Dee, you're going to be a real experiment there.
Yeah, I've lived with this problem for probably a good 25 years. Yeah, and it's just been cumulative. So, you know, finding out that the vulvodynia, and I also have something called pudendal neuralgia. I have constant burning in that area. It's not ever gone away. And just the issues with the having my most recent CAT scan and then finding a calcium deposit over my left eye and my brain, and then a calcium deposit in my abdomen a few years ago. Yeah, it'll be interesting.
And have you ever taken like high doses of C?
No, never.
Because a lot of chemically sensitive people have, you know, so.
I did take C for a short while, and it was buffered C, but I didn't take it in high doses. And I'm very cautious about taking supplements because I have mast cell activation syndrome. So I have reactions to just about everything out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, in that case, it was probably a good thing. You didn't
do it. Right. Yeah. My body said, no way.
Yeah, I have to tell you that, you know, I detoxed people initially in the sauna for years. And I did notice that sweating is a learned response. Like some people who go out and run, they can sweat when they exercise, but they can't sweat in the sauna or can't sweat with infrared. But if you keep doing it, like gradually increase the heat and the first woman I ever detoxed in the sauna, she couldn't sweat or she couldn't take the heat more than like 100 degrees. And then as time went on, she increased it to 140 and sweated more and more. And I noticed I went in an infrared sauna one time and I thought I was going to die after 20 minutes. I felt so bad, but I wasn't sweating. And I believe that whatever process you use, you know, start up slow and increase slowly and see if you can't learn to sweat. Because a lot of chemically sensitive people can't sweat.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I finally found an integrative medicine doctor in the late 90s. You know, and my, like I said, my grandmother didn't sweat. My dad doesn't sweat. very little, like get a few beads on your chest, but it's got to be, he's got to be out there doing work, you know, outside. So I've got that same genetic predisposition. It's on that side of the family.
I wonder if you couldn't use your feet, because there are more sweat glands per square inch on your feet. Mm-hmm. And so what happens if you take the Epsom salts on your wet feet and rub them in? I wonder if that would help you detox out your feet. I'd love
it. It's worth a try. I mean, I do urinate a lot, but I mean, that could be related to other issues. You know, I just,
That might be the compensate for not sweating.
Right. That's what I initially thought all my life. I thought, well, I'm urinating a lot because I don't sweat. My body's got to find a way to release some of these toxins. But
do you have allergies? Hello? Do you have allergies?
Oh, I have very bad allergies. I've had allergies since birth.
Okay. Because I don't sweat and I have bad allergies. So I just think that's my body getting rid of stuff that the sweat glands won't do. I kind of, walk in the sun does that for me, but I don't know if you can do that, but that's when I sweat. Walking's good for that.
Yeah, I don't sweat when I walk either. I don't sweat. I can't do saunas. I can't do hot tubs, any of that. I can't.
All right.
But thanks. Good thought.
I wonder if you have sweat glands, you know, or pores or, you know.
I used to, like when I was younger, I would literally go to the beach and be at the beach just about all day. And the most I would get would be tacky skin, no sweating, tacky skin, and beading on my chest. I would do the gym and aerobics when I was younger, when I could, before I got really sick, and no sweat at all. All my friends would be dripping. Yeah.
Wow.
So it just got harder and harder to do aerobics. Yeah.
Did you ever have your amino acids tested?
No.
I know one chemically sensitive person who cannot hold on to her. She has cysteineuria, so she can't hold on to her cysteine, which is essential for making glutathione. And so she just pees it all out. And I did the foot bath on her. And after that, she got really oily hair. Like the toxins were coming out her head and it was like grease. She had to wash her hair a few times to get this. It was like Vaseline, you know, coming out of my head. And I noticed, like with the oxalates, they were coming out of my head. They were like little bumps.
Uh-huh. And it was her, what was it called?
Cysteineuria.
Okay. And that was the problem she had, or?
That was at least one. She was extremely chemically sensitive.
Yeah.
And, you know, cysteine is super. That's actually how I got my son better when he was poisoned, was I gave him cysteine, but it was measured to be low in his body. And so just giving him L-cysteine on an empty stomach improved his health and shortened his reaction time by about 70%.
That's very interesting, because I cannot do straight up glutathione or nebulized glutathione. It makes me violently ill.
Oh,
because it's too much too fast. My body doesn't do well with it. So I'm wondering if there's an issue with the cysteine and me needing to produce my own glutathione instead of.
It would be interesting to have your amino acids tested. He had both his blood and his urine tested.
Okay, good to know.
So
I'm a mess, Connie.
Well, it's all a learning process, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, wait a minute. Any lab can do the amino acid testing. But you just have to get a doctor to order it. And he had, in each test back then, he had 40 amino acids tested.
Okay.
Was complete. He was low in cysteine, taurine, and phosphoethanolamine. And in your body, taurine is made from cysteine. And taurine is what carries the hypochlorite ion out of your body. So if you get sick when you're swimming in a chlorinated pool, that's why.
Okay.
You need the taurine to help carry it out. And phosphoethanolamine is from lecithin.